Dr. George Friedman is a geopolitical forecaster and best-selling author of 9 books, whose latest work focuses on the United States, arguing that the country finds itself in a cyclical state of crisis every 80 years. In The Storm Before the Calm, Dr. Friedman posits that crunch time is approaching this decade, which will see dramatic upheaval in American society. He says a fundamental reshaping of government, foreign policy, economics and culture is in store, making way, he argues, for a new stability and prosperity in the United States in the 2030s and beyond. He argues that this is a cycle that has repeated throughout the country's comparatively short history. George Friedman's last book, Flashpoints, The Emerging Crisis in Europe, looked at the centuries-old social and political fault lines in Europe and whether they are reopening. He is with us from his home in Texas. Thank you and welcome, Dr. Friedman.
Thanks for having me.
Serious news coming, actually, out of the White House. We only have scatters of it at the moment, but if, as this is confirmed, as some kind of an incident involving someone, a suspect being shot by the Secret Service, does it fit very much into the narrative of the times, that this is a very tumultuous period, a time of incivility, as you have written it, a time where an era is yielding to something else?
Well, it certainly fits in. I hope nothing happened here and nobody was shot. But yes, I mean, this is one of the periods in the United States, as it was in the 1960s and 70s, where dramatic shifts are taking place and American society is under huge strain and reacting as it does every 50 years or 80 years, depending on the cycle, reacting very harshly and very badly. It's in our nature.
You are, as we said, a geopolitical forecaster with a business of going back many years. Why have you wanted to write specifically about the U.S. at this time?
Well, it's a rolling story. I had this theory on how the U.S. behaves right after Richard Nixon was impeached and the last time that we were going to never recover again. And a few years before 2020, I realized that the cycle was in the process of repeating itself. I realized that we were not only reaching that point, 2020, but that the warning signs were up, that the tensions within the United States were rising. And the election of President Trump was really the signal that it was there, because he represented a vast minority of people who had been dispossessed, if you will, during the previous cycle, the industrial working class. And Hillary Clinton, who would call these people the deplorables, lost the election on that, because what he did was he spoke to them and spoke in their language and rallied them, and he won. And those it set up the struggle between what I call the technocracy, or perhaps I should call them the Zoom people, who, like me, do our work over Zoom, and those who have to lift things and bend metal and do those other things. And they are no longer one at this point.
Is the United States unique in this? Interesting, you were talking about what's happened in Europe, which has undergone an extraordinary period both of stability and of unity throughout the EU process, but is now seeing pressures and some fracturing. In some ways, there's a similarity. If you look at the United States, it is a continent. It is a continent made up of very diverse peoples that holds together, so far anyway, in a quite extraordinary way. What is similar and what is different between the two?
Well, 30 years in Europe is a blink of an eye. They have been there doing this for a very, very long time, much longer than the United States. They're natural countries. French are French. The Germans are German. The Italians are Italians. The United States is an invented country. Its government was invented. A committee meeting was held and the Constitution was drawn up. And we fought a revolution to make ourselves free. 1% of all American males died in that war. It was a bloody war. We're also somewhat like New Zealand. We are an invented people. We are waves of immigrants who are wildly different. And as the Irish were regarded, the Scots-Irish as well, or the Germans, highly improbable to integrate into American society. In the United States, every wave of immigration is a horrible threat to the stability and nature of the country, yet we get over it. And finally, we reinvented the geography of the continent. We not only created canals linking the Midwest to the Atlantic Ocean, but we also redefined what it means. So what we are is a country that invented itself and constantly reinvents itself. We're a country consisting of people who left the place they were born, rejected by that place, invented their own lives here, and we're very used to and expecting instability, because all of us came here in a very unstable way, and we want to have dramatic change, and we pay the price for that willingly.
Could we talk about the two cycles that you have identified over what we said is a comparatively short history? One, you argue, occurs every 80 years approximately, the other every 50 years approximately. What are the nature of the two cycles?
Well, the 80-year cycle is what I call an institutional one. It begins with the founding of the United States, which left up in the air what the relationship of the states are to the federal government. Then that 80 years later resulted in the Civil War, which determined that the federal government, on the whole, was the dominant force. 80 years after that, we had World War II and the U.S. federal government massively intruding in society, determining how economics operate, how life goes on. And that never ended. That remained an ongoing thing in American society, a massive intrusion of federal life. We are now at the point, 80 years after that, 2025, if you will, when that's not working any longer, where when we look at the COVID crisis, we can see the government unable to come to terms with what's going on. And of course, each party blames the other for being monstrous. But the reality is the complexity of the federal government, the vastness of its responsibilities overwhelms its ability to do the job. So now we have to once again reinvent the government.
So we have these two cycles. You argue they collide in 2020. By coincidence?
Purely by coincidence. The 50-year cycle, every 50 years we change our socioeconomic life. The last time we did it was in 1980, when Ronald Reagan took over, and the world after Ronald Reagan, in terms of technology, in terms of social mores, was wildly different from the, as we put it, the Donna Reed decade before then. Roosevelt came in and took over as well. So every 50 years, because we are developing technology, transforming our social life so rapidly, every 50 years we reach a point we can no longer continue operating the way we were. As it happens, this decade is going to be the one in which the social crisis, which we already see, will be rending the country. And at the same time, the federal government will be less capable of solving the problems that as used to, and will have to refound itself. It will be a very difficult time.
Have we been there before, perhaps around Depression times, where we saw the collapse of stock market, obviously then triggering a broader depression in the real economy, and much debate over the political response that could or should have been? Does that come the closest to them coinciding previously?
The one that looks to me the closest is the crisis that occurred in the 1960s and the 1970s, 50 years before. In that crisis, Martin Luther King was killed. Race riots broke out all over the country. A president was impeached, or virtually impeached. That was Nixon. The United States lost the Vietnam War. And whenever you traveled anywhere, the world was waiting for the United States to collapse. Clearly, we could not survive this kind of crisis, this kind of rioting, this sort of defeat, oil prices wrecking our economy, and so on. That was the last time. The Depression was, of course, another one. There are other more obscure ones for a New Zealand listener that I won't bore with. But yeah, this happened every 50 years. Massive social crisis. Every 80 years, massive institutional crisis. And this is how we do it. We transform ourselves under the pressure of failure over and over.
What will trigger the end of a cycle of one kind or another?
Well, what triggered it is usually a president who normally has not the slightest idea what he's going to be doing, but he steps up. So Franklin Roosevelt was said by most totally unqualified for the job, an airhead and a rich guy. Ronald Reagan, the other one, was an actor who had no business being in politics. So you begin, and we're not at the beginning yet in this decade, with a new president who confronts the previous crisis without all the prejudices of those in the last one. So, for example, the crisis in the United States in the 1970s was that interest rates were at 18%. It's what I paid for my first house for interest. Unemployment was enormous. So was the inflation rate. And the problem was a vast capital shortage. Now, the Roosevelt era, the key was to get money into the hands of the individuals, which increased demand, increased inflation, but didn't do a whole lot for the problem. Well, Ronald Reagan came in and said, no, the problem here is we have to have more money in the hands of rich people because they're not going to buy things, they're going to invest it. And what came out of that, unintendedly, was the vast boom in the microchip. The microchip was invented and distributed around 1970. And by the 1980s and 90s, we're transforming all of our life, getting rid of the economic problem that existed before. So at the root of this is a president who understands that the old solutions don't work, clears the way for capital to be available, and then an invention, be it the automobile, electricity, the microchip, comes along and changes our society again. Right now, the microchip is mature. It's 50 years old. It is not high tech any longer. It is simply, like the automobile in 1965, a ongoing useful thing. So we were without a driving technology at this point. It spins its wheels.
Why are we seeing, and listening very much to this, it is an underlying approval of an orthodoxy that sees a fairly liberal monetary and fiscal situation, right? And plenty of roles for the private sector. Part of your argument is what happens when the federal government grows too big, and I want to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But after this era, this prolonged boom era, which many now turn and blame for inflated debt in the United States and blame for something of various bubbles and potentially a crash, what is it economically that you say has happened that has brought us to a point of crisis? You talk about the decline of the middle class. There was obviously the disruption of many of their jobs. There was, as President Trump would argue, the exporting of many of their jobs. What is the cause of an economic malaise or factor to the social disruption we've seen?
It was a success of the Reagan era. In the Reagan era, money became available for investment. The investments were vastly successful. Now the interest rates on money is near zero in the United States. There is too much money in the system and not enough opportunities to invest them because we've exhausted it. So the core problem here is that the Reagan era exhausted itself. No new solution has come, but we see an economic system that is not functioning. After all, debt is one problem, but the real problem is the money is not worth anything when you put it in the bank.
Okay.
And that is the opposite of the problem that Reagan faced.
So do you argue that the Reagan era exhausted itself and we needed a correction that never came?
No. The exhaustion of the Reagan era, which started in 1980, really will happen in 2030. That'll be the end. We are now entering the period of transition. So the Reagan era was magnificent. I mean, it vastly increased wealth. It was like Roosevelt's period. It was always successful. The problem is it's run out of steam because it's gone so far that it created an imbalance.
Okay.
This always happens.
This was my point of the need to correct, because if we go back to the 2007-2008 global financial crisis, the failure of the banks, apart from, and this is getting into another area, apart from questions over the regulatory system or lack thereof, a very generous monetary policy and expansive monetary policy is in part blamed, along with allowing shite debt instruments, for example, to be traded. Was that a point at which a very liberal monetary policy, to use New Zealand terms, a very expansive monetary policy, needed to be corrected?
Well, the problem is this. The era, this era, and also the era before the Depression, was wildly successful. For example, the United States in 1900 became the producer of half of the industrial goods in the world, and did this in 30 years. Yes, that finally had a consequence in the imbalances that were created. So, too, the period of Reagan created a vast imbalance, but vast innovations, vast transformations of everyday life, and vast amounts of money. You run out of steam. So the basic way to think of the United States is, in these eras, they are always going to be successful, wildly so, and then hit a wall and go sliding down it. So it's not a surprise that this happens. This has happened before. The problem is that we're not at a transition point yet. We have 10 painful years to go through, based on past experience, to figure out how this is going to work out.
You mentioned the role of technology. If the microchip is mature, clearly what it has made possible is still advancing at pace as size, efficacy, productivity continues to benefit from, of modern technologies continues to benefit from it. But if it is mature, and therefore presumably the differences that it makes is on a diminishing returns track, what happens when that's exhausted?
Well, that's when the crisis really begins to bite. In the same way that it was in the 1970s that the auto industry encountered the devil when Chrysler went bankrupt, the same way that that happened, we are going to see serious failures in the high-tech industry, and that's going to be equally painful. What gets us out of it, of course, is what's always done in the past, is radical new technology. Nobody expected the microchip. Few expected the automobile. So in every era, we wind up with an unexpected thing. You can try to imagine what it is. I can do that. But the important thing is that the transformation takes place when productivity rises. Right now, productivity in the United States is flat to negative. The vast improvement that the microchip made has not worn itself out, but it has reached a peak that they can't go any higher. So what happens is that you restructure the economy in such a way as to facilitate new technologies to transform the United States.
Is there a risk in presuming the cycles will continue? And the reason I ask this is that automobile, that amazing invention and everything else that came with the combustion engine, that came with industrialization, has left a legacy of adverse consequences, which you don't deal greatly with, which is climate change. And what we don't, we factor in human behaviour here and economic behaviour and political behaviour and indeed geopolitical relations, but we don't factor in that curveball that we may, as a result of successes, have created problems that are going to consume us. Is there a risk in presuming another bout of technology and creativity will produce the same results?
Well, of course, there's always the possibility of the apocalypse. I kind of feel I'm living in it right now. I think you are too. Yeah, that's always possible. One of the things I said in my book about global warming is that I really don't know what's going to happen. The math really is not nearly as obvious as people say, which means it could be far worse than we think, but is not really all that much there. And also, I said I don't get involved in religious arguments. By that, I mean people who are, by matter of faith, on either side, and they try to recruit everybody to believe there is no problem or there is a terrible problem. But the point is that, there were many, many problems. The United States, remember, went through a systemic event, the Civil War, in which 650,000 people died. From the United States, as a small country at that time, that was a stunning event. It recovered from it. So I will say this much. All the things you say may well be true, but the one country that is built to deal with problems and doesn't do well when it solves the problems is the United States. We were an invented country and we still invent solutions. So will we solve global warming? I have no idea. But so far, so good.
I'm curious about the technocrats and the arguments around the federal government getting so large. One of the other observations that mixed economies like New Zealand, where we have a significant public sector, say a large public health service, right, and public education available, and there are private options, but there is a substantial public health and education service available, substantial welfare service available, even our accident compensation. You cannot sue here. If I run you over in my car, you can't sue me, but you will have your injury costs, etc., covered. One of the sort of paradoxes we find looking at the United States is that this economic powerhouse can provide so many difficulties to someone who is sick or injured. And when you look at the technocrats in government, at the public government role in that area, how do you explain it to others who say, why is your health system so hard?
Well, I've been in New Zealand many times. I love your country very much. But we're 330 million people spread across a continent, highly diverse in culture, highly diverse in what they think health consists of. It's a very difficult, different situation. But the problem with our healthcare system is essentially this. It's run by experts. Now, in World War II, we learned that experts can win a war, and experts are wonderful, but experts are also narrow. They know the area they know, they don't know other areas. So with sufficient expertise, you will create a system of brilliant dots, if you will, none of which speak to each other, none of which discuss the matter in any way, and in the end, produce solutions that are incomprehensible to many people. This is one of the problems of the federal government. So one of the things you look at is when we passed what was called the Social Security Act, which is an important act from back in the New Deal, that was 15 pages long. Our health care regulations are 15,000 pages long. No one has read them, I'm sure. I wouldn't even try. No one knows if they're compatible. So we have two problems. First, the nature of the United States presents diversity of such massive size that one size never fits all. The second is that we're at the stage in the federal government where its inability to be coherent and to be work together. Well, we see this even in COVID, the tremendous tension between the parts of the government over the question of what do we do with COVID? And medical experts are saying one thing, people in the stock market are saying another thing. All of them are quite bright, all of them are quite experts. They just don't talk to each other. And this is a crisis.
If President Trump's election is the signal of the start of the end of the cycle, and you point specifically to those working class white, I presume more sort of Rust Belt electorates and voters who responded to his message. What is it that comes next? over the decade, and particularly perhaps the 2028 election, which is where you say there will be this big shift?
Well, I mean, what is going to happen is going to be slow, because this particular problem, the split between classes, will exist regardless of whether Trump wins or loses. There is a deep gap socially, economically, and culturally between the Middle West and the coasts. Hillary Clinton won the northeast of the United States, the West Coast. She won three states between the Appalachian Mountains and the Rocky Mountains. So the center of the country went for Trump. The coasts went for Clinton. And this is an enormous split within the United States, similar to the one we saw during the Vietnam War between the hippies and the others, similar to what we saw at Great Depression. We've split, and this fight is going to be fought out regardless who the president is.
Thank you very much. That is George Friedman. His latest book, The Storm Before the Calm, focuses on the United States and his hypothesis for its recurring cycles of unrest that lead, he argues, to periods of creation and an upswing, which he is predicting for the country in the 2030s.